His gospel today picks up right where last week's gospel left off. And this is the end of our going through St. John's gospel. Starting next Sunday, we're going to be in Mark's gospel. But right where this gospel begins, it says, many of Jesus' disciples who were listening said, this saying is hard. Who can accept it? The saying that they're referring to is what we heard in last week's gospel when Jesus said, and you heard me preach on this last week. I told you it was the strongest language about the Eucharist in the scriptures. Jesus said, my flesh is true food and my blood is true drink. And you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood or you have no life within you. So that's what they're talking about when the disciples speak up and it says, Lord, this saying is hard. Who can accept it? They knew what he was saying. They knew that he was not speaking metaphorically. They knew exactly what he meant when he said, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. They knew that they knew he was being serious. And that's why they're protesting here. And St. John tells us at the end of this passage what happened. He says, as a result of this, many of his disciples returned to their former way of life and no longer followed him. They were happy to follow him up to a point. They were listening to his teaching and they were believing him. But then he brings up the Eucharist and he says, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And for them, that was enough. They couldn't accept that. They were happy with what he was doing, but that was too much. And John tells us they returned to their former way of life. They stopped following him. I think it's a very sad part of the Gospels, that one sentence there. Because we can have to wonder, we do wonder, what might have happened with those disciples? Had they believed Jesus? Had they accepted this teaching, despite the fact that, yeah, it's a hard teaching, what might have happened? How many more saints would we have had? We may not have just had four Gospels by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We may have had, you know, a fifth or a sixth or a seventh Gospel. Who knows? Who only knows what could have happened, what would have been, if those people who turned away said, you know what, even though it's hard, we're going to accept this. Thank God that's what the 12 apostles did. Jesus speaks up to the 12 right after those other people leave, and he says to them, do you also want to leave? You want to leave with these other people who think that this teaching is too hard? And Peter, who of course would go on to be our first pope, Simon Peter speaks up and he says, Master, to whom shall we go? You have the words of everlasting life. We have come to believe and we are convinced that you are the Holy One of God. So Peter expresses the same sense of, yeah, this is hard, but at the same time, what he says is, but we've been with you long enough, Lord, that we've come to know you, we've come to believe you, we've come to trust you, and even though this teaching is hard, what are we supposed to do about it? Just ditch you when things get hard? Peter's saying, Lord, we've seen too much. We know that you speak the truth, and so even though this is a hard teaching, we have to accept it. We know the truth, and we can't turn away from it. We see this same theme in that first reading from the book of Joshua, because Joshua, speaking to the Israelites, he says, if it does not please you to serve the Lord, decide today who you're going to serve. The gods of your fathers beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose country you now are. He says, but as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Joshua says, yeah, it's rough right now. It's rough to be a follower of the Lord. But are you going to abandon him because it's rough? And Joshua says, we're not. Me and my household, we're going to keep serving the Lord even though it is rough. Thank God the Israelites speak up and they say, you know what? It is rough. Far be it from us, though, to forsake the Lord for the service of other gods. And they remember everything that the Lord did. They said, he brought us out of Egypt. He performed those great miracles when we were in the desert. He fed us. He did all these great things. They say the same kind of thing. They say, we've seen too much to ditch him now. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough being a follower of the Lord. But when we've come to know him and we've come to believe that what he says is true and that what he tells us to do is actually good for us and that the rules that he makes for us are not just rules for the sake of tripping us up, but they're for our own good, how can we not listen? I think that sometimes we can run into that, perhaps especially in a deployed environment, that feeling that the disciples had in the gospel reading, that the Israelites had in that first reading of, You know what, Lord? There are times when it is rough to be a follower of yours. There are times when I don't want to do what you tell me I should do, and I want to do what you tell me I shouldn't do. There are times when it's really rough to be a follower of the Lord. And we have two responses. We can say, you know what, peace out when it gets rough. Or we can do what Peter and the other 12 did, what Joshua leading those Israelites did. Say, you know what, Lord, even though it's rough, we've come to believe. We've come to trust you, and we can't ditch you when it gets rough. I would encourage all of you, I imagine all of us have had some kind of moment in our life. I know I've had a few, and I imagine all of us have had some experiences. Maybe a miracle might be too strong of language, but maybe you've seen something, or you've heard something, or you've experienced God in such a way that something happened at some point in your life, maybe, and you said, "You know what? Like, there is a God." I know I've had a few of those experiences myself, and I try to remember them and try to tuck them away so that when it does get rough to be his follower, I can kind of lean back on that and say, you know what, John, like, you've experienced him. He's proven himself to you again and again and again. You know that there is a God. You know that he loves you, that he only wants what's best for you, and that when he tells you to do certain things or not do certain things, it's for your own good. And it's helpful for me, and I would just offer it to you perhaps as a piece of advice when it gets rough for you to be a follower of the Lord, to be able to lean back on those things, just like the Israelites did. They said, we saw him perform great miracles. We know that he loves us. We know that there's a God out there. And I want to tie in the second reading, because kind of the theme in the first reading and in the gospel is that it gets rough, but that we who have come to believe the Lord and to know him need to obey anyways, need to follow him. The second reading, though, now we heard the short version of the second reading. I don't know if the long version is in here, but the long version was in the Missalette and has some very controversial reading. There's some very controversial material in there that I hate to pass up an opportunity to preach on something controversial. St. Paul, if you looked in the whole passage in the Missalette there, what does St. Paul say? He says, wives, be subordinate to your husbands. Right? He says, be subordinate to your husbands in all things. He has a whole language here that if we don't put it in its context, if we don't look at it properly, we could say, oh, he's just being misogynistic. He's a product of his time. He's just out of touch. What St. Paul is saying is he's talking about one part of what it means to follow God. So that gospel and that first reading telling us that it's important to follow God even when it's rough, St. Paul is saying now everything that entails, that if I'm going to be a follower of God, that means that it's not just me and God. It's a very Protestant approach to religion, that it's just me and God. If I'm going to be a follower of God, that means everything that entails. That means following the church that he established, following the hierarchy of the church, listening to them, obeying them, even though they are sinful people. The hierarchy continues at home, even. And St. Paul is talking about this one part of it. But this is what's important that we have to take from St. Paul's reading. St. Paul is not saying, wives, just shut up and listen to your husbands and do whatever they tell you. Most of what he is saying, what we heard in that reading, was addressed to the husbands. What does he say? He says, husbands, love your wives and be willing to suffer and die for them as Christ was willing to suffer and die for his bride, the church. St. Paul is talking about servant leadership here. St. Paul is saying that to lead means that you're the first who's going to suffer. He's talking more so to husbands than he is to wives here. He's saying, husbands, you're in a position of leadership in the family. Yes, the husband is the head of the family. And he says, wives, be subordinate to your husbands. And he goes on, he says elsewhere, and children, be subordinate to your mother. And it continues up the entire chain of command. The husband, who is the the husband and father, the head of the household, the family, which is the building block of society. Husbands are supposed to be subordinate to the local pastor. The local pastor is subordinate to the local bishop. The local bishop is subordinate to the Pope. The Pope to Christ, and Christ to God the Father. We see this throughout scriptures, but St. Paul's point is that leadership here is a willingness to suffer. Leadership is I'm going to be the first to suffer. I'm not going to hoard my authority over someone else. We see this going all the way up and down the church chain of command, if you want to call it that. That God the Father sent his Son. Jesus Christ said that he had come to serve God the Father, to do only the will of the Father. Christ establishes the church as his bride, suffers and dies for her, exercising that servant leadership. He founded the church on the apostles suffering and dying for the church. Earlier this week, we had the feast day of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Maximilian Kolbe was a priest who was captured by the Nazis, and when he was in the concentration camp, they were about to kill one of his cellmates, who was a married man, had a wife and children. And Maximilian Kolbe spoke up and said, "Kill me instead." He understood what it meant to be the priest, to be the pastor of that community. He understood that it meant that I'm the first to suffer. And so he offered his life in exchange for that man. And he was martyred, and that's why we celebrate his feast day as a martyr. And he has a quote that I'll share with you real quick that I think ties in St. Paul's point. St. Paul's point is, yes, there's a chain of command. We're all obedient to someone. St. Paul's point is, wherever you find yourself on that chain of command, recognize that obedience is a virtue and can be an opportunity for us to grow. And these are St. Maximilian Kolbe's words. This is a great point that he made. He says this: "A superior may, it is true, make a mistake. But it is impossible for us to be mistaken in obeying a superior's command. The only exception to this rule is the case of a superior commanding something that in even the slightest way would contravene God's law." End quote. St. Maximilian Kolbe, talking about the virtue of obedience. We see that in the military. We know that we follow orders. Obviously, this caveat that Maximilian Kolbe talks about, you know, we have that same caveat in the military. You know, you don't follow an unlawful order. Your superior can't tell you to do something unlawful, immoral. And yet, Maximilian Kolbe's point is we all find ourselves in that church chain of command. We're all obedient to someone. Jesus Christ, obedient to God the Father. The Pope, obedient to Jesus Christ. One of the titles of the Pope, by the way, is the servant of the servants of God. That his job, again, is the first to suffer. That he's in that leadership position to serve us. And that everywhere on the face of the earth has some diocese, some local bishop, and they're supposed to be the head of that area. They're supposed to be the first to suffer, exercising that servant leadership. And within each diocese, a parish, and Maximilian Kolbe as that pastor of that parish at the concentration camp being the first to suffer. St. Paul's saying to the husbands today, you're the first to suffer in your family. That's what leadership is. It's a servant leadership. But Maximilian Kolbe's point is there is a great freedom, and this is what I'll wrap up with, there's a great freedom in obedience. We can sometimes look at obedience as some kind of antiquated ideal. If we take St. Paul out of context and we think that he's, when he tells wives to be subordinate, that he's telling them just to shut up and listen to their husbands. That's not St. Paul's point. That's not obedience. Obedience gives us the freedom, gives us a great freedom to know that we're serving God in whatever situation we find ourselves in, so long as we are doing what our superior tells us to do. His point applies to the military just as much as to the church. A superior might be mistaken in telling you to do something, but it's impossible for us to be mistaken in following that order. Think about that. I'll give you a quick example. When I was ordained, whenever someone's ordained, part of the ordination rite, before the bishop actually lays hands on you and makes you whatever it is that he's ordaining you, a deacon, a priest, a bishop, whatever, you kneel before the bishop and you put out your hands, and he takes your hands in his And what he asks you is, he says, do you promise me and my successors respect and obedience? And for me, when I was ordained and took those vows, that was arguably a harder vow to take than celibacy. Because what I'm saying when I promise obedience, when I take that vow of obedience, is I'm saying, not just to you, but to your successors, I'm promising to obey the Archbishop of Washington, whoever that is, for the rest of my life. It's easy for me to say that to Cardinal Wuerl, the current Archbishop. I know him. I know that he has my best interests at mind. I like him as a person. He's a good leader. I'm not just obeying him, though. I'm saying, whoever that Archbishop is, I'm putting my hands in God. I'm putting my life in God's hands, really. Saying, whoever one day becomes the Archbishop of Washington, it may be someone who's getting ordained right next to me, who I think, God, that guy's an idiot, but one day he may be my boss. And I'm vowing obedience. I am saying, whoever that is, I will do what they tell me to do. And even if one day they give me an assignment that I don't think fits my, you know, skills and talents, and even if one day they tell me to do something as a priest that I don't think, you know, I could do something better, I could take a better parish, whatever, that there's a great freedom for me in knowing that, you know what, so long as I'm doing what my superior is telling me to do, I'm pleasing God. I don't need to figure out how's the best way to please God. I am pleasing God if I am doing what my superior is telling me to do. There's a great freedom in obedience. So I leave you with that as something to think about, that message in these readings today, that we need to obey God. We see it in the first reading. We see it in the gospel reading. That message to obey God means everything that flows from that. Christ, the church, our Holy Father, our bishops, our priests, and that we find great freedom in that. So let's pray for that today, and let's ask for St. Maximilian Kolbe's intercession as well.